This is Melissa, and it is the 31st of March, 2024, and I am playing a redux for you today that was part two, hour two, of a talk that Alan Watt had with Henrique Palmgren of Red Ice. At the time, it was Red Ice Radio, June 24, 2007. I have given this a new title, Happy Easter, From the Matrix to the True Trinity. And I'm not going to speak in front of this talk today, but at the end of it, because it just makes more sense to do it that way. So maybe by the time you get through this amazing talk from Alan Watt, and then you hear what I have to say at the end, the title will make sense to you. So enjoy.
I did receive a mail from a lady, I can't remember her name now, but who asked, you know, me a little bit about, if I could ask you a little bit about the, not maybe spiritual topics in that sense, but I know that a lot of stuff, you know, that we do talk about here, of course, is very, in a way, is very much about the physical control of the controls, but also, of course, obviously about the psychological control. So it obviously goes beyond the physical. But I know that this particular lady was a little bit, maybe not. I guess she felt a little bit, you know, not hopeless, but maybe that she saw it that it was a side to all of this that we are talking about, about many of the problems that we see and discuss here, that there is another, you know, side to it. And I don't know if you want to address this at all, or even, you know, in that sense want to talk about it, but I mean, do you get, if we were to talk about the response on your website, do you get a in that sense a positive response, and that people are behind you, or do you think that they're resistant to the information, or how is the consensus in a way?
I think the ones who understand where I've been going with all this have also come through different stages of by themselves to realize that even the whole spiritual side of things, not just in this age, but in all ages, has been given to the public and controlled, updated, you might say, just like a program of a computer.
Yeah.
That there's certain realities that everyone knows, and all ages, all peoples, and that is that we sometimes know there's something else beyond us. We all get to that step.
Yeah.
And of course, that's what priesthoods in all ages have also known, that we have a yearning for something beyond all of this.
Yeah.
That once in a while, you feel maybe a little closer to, could be very transient experience. Generally when you're on your own, or it's quiet, or it's nighttime or something. But it's something that transcends all the worry and the induced worry, the controlled worry that we have in this planet.
Yeah.
However, the priesthoods in all ages have used all kinds of tricks through charlatans and dominated this need that humanity has to control the people rather than free the people.
Mm-hmm.
Anything which tells you that there's a fate, or is written in the stars, or it's revelations,
mm-hmm.
or it's God's will, that's the trick of predictive programming.
Yeah.
It makes you feel helpless, nothing you can do about it, it's the way it's going to be. And psychological warfare experts in all ages understand this technique. They even rehashed Nostradamus' prophecies of World War II for the Nazis, and they dropped leaflets all over Poland with slants on it, predicting that, well, see, Nostradamus said it, so it's going to be, you've had it, you're going to be overrun.
Yeah, yeah.
To try and make the people give up psychologically. So a few people in all ages can go past all of that and see through it and have their own natural experience. I call it natural experiences, because anything that happens has to be natural.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Even what's called supernatural by others. But the problem today is we live in a scientific age where science has been able for a long time to mimic what people think of as spiritual experiences. Not only that, for instance, he's a good example. The New Age movement was funded from its inception in the West by mainly the MI6, the big foundations that work in conjunctions with MI6 and the CIA, and they promoted the whole New Age movement. And the whole blending of what was seen to be Indian mysticism with Christianity. Now, even in the 1800s, Blavatsky and others were sent out to start the ball rolling in that direction. And she said to herself that the object was eventually to blend science with the spirit. This crossing of science and spirit. So, Nick Begich and other people have demonstrated the obsolete technology, the portable handheld remote type devices that can insert a thought in a person's brain by line of sight. And you could be walking along the countryside and suddenly you'd have this eureka moment, or have a vision, or hear a voice, or hear God talking to you. And you'd believe it was God, because after all, what else could it be? And, of course, what we've found out, too, through declassified information, the funding of the big movements towards the New Age movement, with all the meditation schools in the West, many of them had this technology embedded in the walls. So people were having their Om meditation. They pay their money like good citizens in a capitalist system, and they expect results, and by golly, God talks to you.
You got it, yeah.
So they've been using what would seem to be the general public to be magical techniques, which are only scientific techniques, to try and simulate something which they know themselves is occasionally real to a few people down through the ages. Now, the other big problem is when you go into these areas, you'll find the bulk of the populace who haven't studied much in their lives. In fact, they haven't known reality in their own lives. They take things for granted. What they do accept is fear. They all feel fear or uncertainty of the economy or whatever the next fear is that's spouted by the media. They feel all that. And so fear tends to push them into looking for an escape route.
Yeah, of course.
And so once again, in come the religionists or the New Agers movement to say, hey, nothing's real anyway. Just sit back and enjoy the ride. An old trick that was learned in India, because that was used in India for thousands of years to control the people. You could sit and watch your wife being slaughtered, your family being slaughtered. But if you've been trained that nothing is real, you'd sit there and smile as it was happening, and then they got around to killing you.
Yeah, that's a part of the caste system, I guess, in itself.
That too,
yeah.
So literally taught that nothing was really real, you know.
So what you're saying here, in a way, is that this is to help pacify people from actually going out and doing something about, you know, what's rotten in the world, I guess.
Yeah, that they don't even participate in changing what's happening, what they know is happening, or they find out is happening. They, rather than participate in trying to make it better or even deviate from the course that is planned, they'd rather go into complete escapism and not look at the express train that's coming up the tracks behind them. So that, again, is psychological warfare. Those people have already been mentally disarmed because they're not participating in this life. In ancient times, they would talk about the completed person. This used to be known even in early Christianity, because it predated Christianity, but a completed person was the first Trinity. That was body, soul, and spirit, the Trinity. And over years, soul somehow got blended with spirit until it became the same, and then it missed the mark. Because the whole idea of being here in the world in ancient times was to for your soul, which did the seeking, that was the motivating factor, to find its own other part. That was the real soulmate. That was spirit. It was that which was really part of you, but disconnected. And the person who sought, that was the old journey, was to seek it. And if it came towards you and joined, you were completed. That's where the term even genii or genius came from in the Greek. So you had a responsibility on earth that wasn't just to live, marry and have children or accumulate wealth or whatever.
Yeah.
It was also to complete a journey. The soul in itself, it was said, this is what was believed, at least amongst the people, but the soul itself had very little, had no real personality.
Okay.
And if the person failed to complete the mission, then when they died, the soul just went back into the big soup mix, and it didn't gain anything, nothing was retained. The whole idea of the ancient forms of perfection meant that the actual soul would do its journey through the person, through the body, mate with the spirit itself, which is pure understanding, and be complete. Once you were complete, after death, you would have knowledge, you would continue. If you didn't, the soul went back, there was no repetition, there was no you anymore. That's what it used to mean.
Is it?
So they had all these ancient debates in Babylon and different places about all of this.
Yeah.
It's written, if you understand the journeys of the Ka and the Ba in Egypt, what they really all mean, because there's always an esoteric side to things and an exoteric side for the bulk of the populace who would rather have ritual and people of same minds going through the same rituals with the same dogmas that makes people feel comfortable, where it was always the specific individual who went beyond that and understood the esoteric.
So,
it's interesting that science today has tried to emulate all of those things which we what we called beforehand supernatural. And a lot of it has been accomplished already. They could, if an experience happens in your mind, and you see a vision or you hear a voice that's intelligible and makes sense to you, you could never be sure anymore if it's been induced through science, because they understand the language of the codings, again, the frequencies of both the visual cortex and the auditory, and they can create both, and that's declassified stuff.
So
now we're in trouble.
Now we're in trouble. I mean, in a way, obviously it does matter. So that's not my question here. But our experience here, I would attribute it to a spiritual journey, I guess, our life on this planet at this moment. And in a way, at the moment at least, in kind of my overarching philosophy, is that in a way I see that everything that actually happens on our planet and on this level is actually exactly, it's the perfect thing in a way. It is exactly what we in a way deserve, and it's also exactly what we need to experience right now to actually move on or move beyond. Because just as you say, if science is catching up with all of this, we definitely need to find something you know, something even more real, or something even, you know, further beyond, or even more in contact with true spirituality. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, and even if you had true spirituality, even that has been so vastly overdone with the New Age movement, that they expect a perfection, physical and every other way, a person who claims they have it, which has nothing to do with the reality or what it originally meant at all. That's why they put their funny robes on and put their noses in the air and put on a smile as if they know something. They really know nothing. This war really has been going on, let's say, since the beginning of time. Now, time's a funny thing altogether. Time is only matter moving in space.
Yeah, it's even biological decay in a sense, you can say, or you know, all decay.
Yeah.
A form of movement.
Like everything in the language.
Yeah.
There's a double meaning, because time is to emit. So time, in a sense, we always think of as something that is short or gone, or some abstract to come, and yet it's also to give out. It's something which gives out. It's a two-way street, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the battle in ancient times was always said that for the individual was to be done on planet Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Planet Earth is the meaning behind so much. In the old occultic societies, the ancient ones, you'll find the root of all the words that are used for the holy people in all religions, because everything was coming from the mother, which is the matrix.
Yeah.
The original matrix, you see, where all things come out of, and mother. Is also matter.
Matter, that's right.
World of matter.
Yeah, that's right.
And so you have mother, mortar, matter. And you also have, she was also given the title of the sea, water.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is born in water.
Yeah.
First baptism. That's what that means as well. So Mare is the sea.
Mare.
Which is Mary.
Yeah, Mary.
And,
So these are
born into this place here, and we have this ability because we have something supposedly called spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Although you must wonder if how many have it, because in the old Aramaic and eventually the Hebrew legends, a time would come when there'd be no more souls born, and when the first soulless people were born, then it would be the end. The end would come
of the. Of the experiment or of the experience machine.
That's right. Or the first purely human designed human being that's born artificially. It's strange how it all ties together. The goal is again always a paradox, a mirror image of a reality. One is real, one is not real. One is a spiritual path. One is an emulation of this same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to free the individual into something, into much more than he or she is.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal of the elite is not to free them, but to give world peace through a type of freedom from worry, which is non-thinking, non-being, in a sense.
So the in that sense, we could say that the elite in this instance, in this case, is kind of a representative of the force that we as individuals or human beings here have to transcend in order to I don't know if you want to say reach the next level, because that's, you know, that's another way of looking at it, but. If we are to develop as individual or as spiritual beings, I think that I believe that we always are going to find ourselves in a situation where we are, we are put to the test, so to speak, and for this particular era or time that we are in now, we have this incredibly controlling, elite force all around us, that the machine or the beast or even the control grid that is going in. Would you say that this or these guys are the representatives of that dark force that we have to transcend as human beings?
There's no doubt. There's no doubt. I mean, quite plain that their religion is one of a complete, utter belief in genetic superiority.
Mm-hmm.
Of certain peoples.
Mm-hmm.
And intellectual superiority.
Mm-hmm.
And material superiority, because they've accumulated the wealth of the ages.
Yeah.
In families.
Mm-hmm.
Darwinism is an interesting part of the religion, because Darwinism is based, it's a Masonic, an old Masonic belief system that goes back to Hinduism. Mm-hmm. That everything came out of the primordial slime.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty well Hinduism,
yeah,
and it, through the great leap forwards, the the same kind of thing that Arthur C. Clarke, the other high mason, showed in 2001, the movie, done in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the movie, they show you their religion.
Mm.
They show you their complete and utter belief in evolution.
Mm.
And the one who ends with the monkey tribe, who gets the bone and kills his opponent across the way, the first murder of one species killing itself, its own.
Hmm.
That was a superior type, according to them. Those who are going to use utter violence and kill, they claim, have given us progress. They call it progress. And sure enough, all down through the ages, these people, through wars, down to the age of knights and so-called chivalry, have slaughtered and slaughtered and enslaved peoples and made them all slaves working for them. Up to the present time. These are, this is their belief system, is superiority through the right and the ability of might to control the weak.
So
so they, that's their religion. They are, in a sense, what in the West they would call the Antichrist. You know?
Yeah, exactly. The in a bit the this is also a part of the end game battle, you know, who who has attained the most when, you know, when time runs out, wins or whatever. It's like a game.
Yeah, not only that, the way they have strategized this so covertly, so cleverly down through the ages, they haven't, they think they haven't left anything to chance. They've covered every possible base.
Do you
think the whole world in the dark through one guise or another, while they have the arrogance to publish books on what they are going to do from the top people with the rest of us.
So do you think that they have attained all on all levels? They know the game so well that that they have, you know, in a sense then not win it, because that's not what it is about in that sense, according to what I think at least, but... do you think that there are some factors here or some variables that will come into the picture that even these guys hasn't been able to root out or plan for in ahead of time?
Mm-hmm. Well, they've said that themselves, and that's why they created war on what they called individualism. Because all down through history, the vast bulk of the populace, of every populace, will go along with whatever they're told. The only trouble elites and tyrants have had in the past is an occasional generation here and there. Someone comes through unscathed, intact, and can speak out and say what is. And it's true enough, words and the pen's mightier than the sword. An idea can be a very dangerous thing.
That's right. That's definitely right.
And so they want to eliminate that by literally monitoring, and this has been announced last week, they want to monitor every living person from cradle to grave, psychologically and every other way. And you will get pulled in for reconditioning, you might say, if you're not going along with what they want you to be. They will remake you. That's the extent they're going to. Right down to the bottom level, to the ordinary people who don't have the finances or the power to take over, which tells you it's not just power and finances that they're afraid of, it's the power of the idea and someone who can give it out.
So
that's what they want to vanquish. That's what they're terrified of.
So do you think that there is a... I mean, could there be a kind of a... higher or another purpose for the existence that, that we are experiencing now, considering that there is, in a way, there that there is on many levels attributed to, you know, there is, for those who have eyes to see it, it is a very hopeless thing. But the question is, I guess, if is this only the fact if we view it from a certain point of view, or is this across the board? Is there another, you know, purpose for our existence here, do you think, that than the one we might, you know, think of every day when we wake up and don't, you know, we have to, this is something I guess you have to focus on, or actually, you know, more spiritually in a way than actually you know, just trying to go out there and battle or fight the new world order, because it seems like whatever happens on the physical level is impossible at this point. Don't you agree?
Yeah, the physical is no problem to them. They have all the bully boys they need. They're matured, of bred generations with the most base education, the most base culture, and basically no parental influence. So they have enough bully boys to do the dirty deeds. But that's not enough, obviously. They're so terrified of something that have gone to such extreme measures to control every man, woman, and child on the planet for forever to come, basically. And published it. So you see, what you have, you cannot make the bulk of the population change their ways, even if you could tell them another way to go, to live. Most of them, this is all they know. This particular 8 to 5, Monday to Friday routine, and reward yourself at the end of the month with a treat. That's what they know, and they'd fight you, in fact, if you could possibly give them an alternative.
I think so.
So the bulk of the populace will always stand up for the status quo, even if the status quo is going to kill them. And they know it. They're like lemmings that will go over the edge, and they can't help themselves. They're more fearful of the unknown than the known. They're not risk takers.
But it feels like a lot of people, you know, complain about their day job, you know, and they want to get out of the system in a way. But do you think that's all, you know, a mouthpiece? It's nothing true in that.
You know by their actions. It's not what people say; it's what they do.
Oh yeah, I agree on that. Definitely, that's right. If you believe that you can make it or break out of the system or even the, you know, financially or whatever, I definitely think that there is a possibility of doing that. It's in that sense, I'm a strong believer in you know, the intention power. If you actually focus on something and if you want it bad enough, you actually are going to get it. But as you say, if the actions of the people are that they're still within the system but yet complain, there is maybe some unconscious level to these persons that they want to be in that role, and they might even feel comfortable within it because they are taken care of in a way, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, there's such a thing as a happy slavery.
Yeah.
And Charles Galton Darwin, like the grandson of Charles, said in his book, The Next Million Years, he says, we are now creating a more sophisticated form of slavery, and that's called socialism. Bush Sr. used a term which the United Nations told them to use, because they're using it now, and it's called communitarianism rather than communism. It's really collectivism. And knowing that about 80-odd%, maybe more today, of the populace are happy to be... to have the illusion, at least, they're being well looked after, as long as they can play from right through their adulthood or die, but without having to worry about serious problems or making big serious decisions. See, socialism or collectivism is perpetual childhood.
So
people are making decisions as to what's going to happen to them on an individual basis every day. You hear them by those who say, "I don't want to know."
Yeah, that's right.
They're telling you that they are making decisions to affect them.
In a way, they're also putting off or postponing the biggest challenge of them all, because in a way, in the end, if you know, if the big boys, as it were, gets the way it wants, these people are gonna end up in a... Well, it depends on how you view it, I guess, because in a way, we might actually live now in the perfect system, because as the old empires, you know, if we study them, they have fallen because of, you know, either that they couldn't supply you with enough, you know, bread and circuses, as we've been talking about, or but that would put this society that we live in now in a way the perfect system to actually so it can sustain itself and actually prevent itself from collapsing, because as long as we can, you know, give people enough you know, products or whatever that would, you know, something that will actually stimulate them enough so they don't want to wake up or don't want to, they don't want to ask the questions. They don't even don't want to escape from their, you know, their regular patterns, basically. So we might now be in the perfect society from the elite's point of view, I guess.
Yes, we are, yeah. They have trained generations now into this with a fake reality which comes from television. They watch, again, Jack C. Lowell said, again, one of the top sociologists, behavioral scientists, he said it in the 50s, he said the public don't realize that every part of entertainment, especially to do with television shows on dramas, fiction, on cops, police, and hospitals and social workers and so on, is all propaganda. Because it's meant to give you a fake view of what it's really all about. So that you'll obey these things as authorities, not as services. And that has happened. That's been fulfilled. People truly think that the social services are out there to help them. They don't realize there's a massive business there that grabs elderly people and puts them in a hospital and confiscates their homes and sells them and puts the money in their bank accounts for the hospital staff, you know, at the top. They don't know the reality of these scams. They believe the TV drama, fictional version. And that's why there's so many cop shows and about them tracking the murderer. It's always some severe crime. It's so dedicated. Police are not there to do that. Police are there to spy on everyone, including you. That's always been the job of policemen. You know, so it gives you a distorted perception of a reality. It doesn't, in other words, it camouflages the bars around the system.
Yeah, definitely. The prison without the bars, as it were, you know. So, but I mean, if let's say more and more people, and I heard reports about this or news stories about that, a lot of people actually are, in a way, turning away, at least from, you know, mainstream media reporting. A lot more people are turning to the internet. Of course, there will be a consequent reaction to this, and there is now, of course. You know, the elite, they flood the internet with a lot of information and so forth, of course, but I think it feels like, in a way, that the old, you know, the television as per se, as it is functioning now, is a bit turning away from, or people are turning away from it, I should say, and finding other, you know, sources. Do you think that is a sign of something positive, or is that just a sign that something...
See, again, we're dealing with think tanks that plan a future and every possible happening in the future. It's very much like the Talmud. It's a Talmudic technique. Those who study the Talmud, and you've probably seen Jewish rabbis as they sort of bob towards each other, up and down, up and down. Well, one throws out a question about something that you and I would say is so immaterial or irrelevant. But it's actually one to do with a comb. Who drops the comb? Okay, does the person who sees it drop, is he responsible for that? What will happen? Could someone fall, trip over that? Who's responsible? Yada, yada. In other words, they take a happening and take 1,000 possible consequences from that happening. Well, that's how think tanks and military circles work. Now, they didn't give us the internet to help us. Internet means to bury the net. You inter the net, you see. International means to bury the nation. You see? And so we're the fish in the net. And when they pull that drawstring, we all get pulled in, you see? It's also called the web. The web is something you get stuck upon.
That's right.
It's not to free you. You just get stuck on it.
Yeah.
So they gave us this, and Brzezinski again talked about it before the public got it. He published it in his book, and he said shortly the public will be given a form of communication which they think will be there to benefit themselves. But will actually, in actual fact, be there to condition a world society along a certain way of thinking. And it's done primarily, again, through the big boys putting out the biggest sites there. If you go into the internet, it's like an LSD trip. There's more phony but well-financed organizations out there with massive sites on Atlantis and everything else, you know, to keep you all fascinated in a never-never land forever and ever, until everything is surrealistic and your concepts and perceptions become, and your conclusions are surrealistic. They're not based on realism. And this is, again, psychological warfare. The big problem is not, and here it is, because I've watched some of the heroes they've given to the public. They've come out demonstrating some of the equipment that the CIA used to use, like the mind control projects. Wondering how they got their hands on this equipment, because you can't buy it at the army surplus stores. It's not there for sale. And now those same people are pushing the benefits of using more science to improve our quality of life, to alter us, make and perfect us. So strangely enough, that they've gone in this circle, this roundabout yawing way, which is probably the real way of Yaw or Yahweh. It's a roundabout tacking way that the nautical guys take. And takes you back in the exact same direction after the guys are freeing you with real information. They take you back into the same slipstream where science is going to be your savior. Which is exactly what the elite want you to think and believe. The big question is, can you have your cake and eat it too?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, all of this that is going on now, do you think it's dangerous in again, we have to return to, I think, the question of if this is about the survival of the human race, then, obviously, this is, you know, extremely dangerous. But is there any other level here that kind of, hints at that what we are, you know, involved in here isn't dangerous in that sense, because this is a part of the experience that we are meant to go through at this time?
Well, the thing is, you can never speak for everyone. Because ultimately, you are a separate being. And your experiences, your knowledge is gleaned from your own experiences. If you have them, even, you know. And what you have, what comes your way, is what you seek. So if you seek science, you'll just immerse yourself in scientific knowledge. If you seek something beyond that, you have to say, if I want truth, I want truth on no conditions. Everyone, in fact, wants ultimate truth, but they want to have their conditions laid down first. And that's been the same in all religions down through the ages and the esoterical traditions. It even slipped it into the New Testament where some guy wants to know or follow the Jesus. And he says, well, this is what you do, give everything away and your lands and so on. He's a rich guy. And the guy cried because he couldn't do that. If you truly are seeking something, you can't bring along your own conditions. And it also means you can't bring along your old way of life and what you clung on to as well.
So
that's where most people fall short. You could give them a chance, say, in an allegorical fashion of a heaven, and yet their own baggage would be their downing point. They couldn't leave it behind them. They'd want to take it with them.
So this
and that will be their anchor.
So this, in a way, is the classical myth or story of the hero's journey. And in a way, you have to. Transcend your, for instance, your let's just say your baggage, either if it's.
Everything that you've worried about and wanted, and yet the more you want, the more you accumulate, the more you worry about it.
That's right.
So, priorities, what is important to the person. And then the whole thing about faith comes down. Do you have faith? If you gave all this up, would you take the big jump, the big leap? And to the unknown, because... Again, truth doesn't come tailor-made and say, well, it's got a nice Hollywood happy ending.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. It could be a great tragedy at the end of that road, but that's not the, as you say, that's part of that journey, because if you would know beforehand what you actually would get, there is even no reason for you to do the journey in the first place, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, and that's what the leader are doing. They're saying, hey, we'll give you all the fantasia. We'll chip your mind, your brain. You could be working in a barn where the cattle are, but you'll think you're on the moon as James Bond fighting the bad guy in your mind.
Yeah.
They're going to give you the scientific reality, a virtual, but not a real, but a virtual reality. A
virtual reality, yeah, that's
And most people you will find will go for that. Because they have no faith in anything else.
Yeah, and even in some instances they've even paid for the experience, as it were, and they are guaranteed a certain amount of, you know, happy and sad moments on the way. It's like a prepackaged, you know, life experience where, you know, you're going to a you know, a agency and you're promised, okay, we guarantee you that you will have this and this included in your experience, so it will be, you know, a pleasant ride for you, basically.
That's right. I think even I think Schwarzenegger did a movie on that.
Total Recall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what the public will go for. Here's my money. That's a Western value system. Here's the money. Give me the experience.
Yeah.
and don't waste my time. Do it now.
Exactly. Yeah. I want to know. That's right.
So the most ancient problem is what is life about? What is the purpose for you? Not for everybody else.
That's right.
The purpose for you.
That's right.
And is the purpose to accumulate knowledge or to stop using a stone axe and use a metal one, which means you start on the sciences? or are you happy living in a world where everything makes sense to you? It's a form of quality. What is total quality to the person? And we have in the West have decided, or has been decided for us a long time ago, that's the allegory of Eden. Once you walk out of Eden, which is nature, you cannot walk back.
That's interesting.
And so you must start where everything was perfect, which is an allegory of perfection. Once you're out of there, now you must feed yourself, clothe yourself, hunt, and in other words, science, through tools and science, etc. You've already chosen a path. There's only one way out of it. And so that's the path we're on. And yet the path itself has told us, or the keepers of the path have told us, they're going to take us into a totally controlled society where even thoughts will be categorized and controlled as well. It cannot, through science, it cannot go any other way.
That's very much, as you say, the adversarial force, the force that, you know, in a sense is afraid of true spirit and true, you know, creativity, true, you know, beauty in that sense, by actually trying to artificially create everything around it, and also in a way controlling it, because if there is such a thing as an omnipotent, you know, being out there, a god or whatever, that actually can see and monitor and actually is in contact with everything, what's interesting, it seems to me, that the world we're, you know, that is being created now is actually trying to replicate the very same thing in a way, you know, either if it's
through a scientific means.
Exactly, yeah. Either if it's through RFID or, you know, IP addresses on every little gadget, you know, it's all about monitoring every single little piece of everything, you know, to create that connection, as it were, with all, I guess.
That's what they want. It's a hive, and that's the term they use at the Loyola meeting. The world will be more like a society. Will be more like a hive. And a hive, you hear the buzzing of the bees, and all you'll hear, just like the Star Trek series on the Borg, is the buzz of thoughts going back and forth between all different peoples. And you could not differentiate your own; it'd be impossible to.
And
the world that they want to bring about now. They're not giving you the right to make your own program, by the way.
Yeah.
Someone else will be authorized and stamped and approved to do it for you.
If people would enter into that system of you know, when it really kicks off technologically, because in a sense we might be there psychologically, but we, many people, as far as I know at least, don't have the ship in them, as it were. But what about people who actually would be in that kind of system and actually, you know, enjoying it? Or would it be right from our perspective to try to go in there and actually stop them from you know, entering into that system?
It would be very much like the Matrix movie itself.
Yeah.
where Morpheus takes Neo, and Neo is just the new Anderson, is Son of Man.
Yeah.
Son of Man.
Yeah.
And so Morpheus is a shapeshifter in a sense, in that he morphs down through the ages. It's an allegory again.
Yeah.
Of people in every age. But however, in the practice matrix, he shows you all the people, and Neo gets distracted with the red clad beauty.
The lady in red, yeah.
And he turns around, and the next minute there's someone with a gun.
Mm.
And then Morpheus tells him, he's trying to point out that everyone around you that you think is normal,
mm.
even those you might love dearly, is a potential agent.
Mm.
Which we already have. You have people today who will turn people in, thinking they're doing the system a favor because you're now aberrant,
yeah.
or you have strange thoughts, or you've got terroristic ideas.
Mm, yeah.
Now, terroristic ideas could be just an opinion on something,
mm.
which is not authorized from the top.
Mm.
It constantly is broadening this whole idea of terrorism.
Mm, yeah, definitely.
So people around about you who don't understand, who think that the news is real and everything they get told is real.
Mm.
They've never questioned their education. They've never studied for themselves. They've been fed all that they know.
Mm.
Those people are dangerous to those around that understand
mm.
what's going on.
Mm.
And they're really basically decent people deep down.
Mm.
It's just that they're already under mind control,
mm.
and they don't know it.
You know, do you think that in a way that it's rather brutal to say that the people in that sense are soulless, because I don't think that's, you know, possible in that sense maybe, but do you think that there is you know, is there the spirit of some people seem to be, you know, strong, the spirits seem to be stronger in some people than in others? Do you think that this particular Is there a particular class of people that actually kind of like, you know, or are more inclined to go into a system that is about all of that control, into the hive, and the true rebel, you know, with the true spirit actually is the one who's only resisting it, but that's not enough to go around, so to speak.
Yeah, see, we do have, in our world, we do have, and I've gone to this many times, this odd phenomena.
Mm.
Called the psychopath.
Mm, yeah.
Psychopathic personality. And it isn't just at the top strata of society. You have it all through society.
Mm, mm.
And perhaps the problem today isn't that there are too few people controlling the majority of good people. Maybe the good people are already in the minority,
mm.
worldwide,
yeah.
all through society.
Hmm.
If you walk and listen to the values the people espouse, it's all concrete thinking, what they've bought, what they want, what they're going to do.
Hmm.
It's egotistical. They've already emulated what they admire, and that's the elite, the ones who have power.
Hmm. Yeah, of course.
They copy their speech, they copy their dress, their fashion.
Hmm.
They want to get up there, or they love to get up there. And a psychopath, you see, worships the more powerful person, the person above them.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only one they'll respect, is the one with more power above them. In fact, they're in awe of the person and their superior, who is superior. We saw that with the communist upper elite
mm-hmm.
military system,
mm-hmm.
and we see it in the Nazi system too.
Mm-hmm.
That the ones below admire the guy above and would grovel almost and salivate at the thought of having that power that the person above them has. Now, the public, unfortunately, are doing the same thing.
Mm.
They're emulating the Donald Trumps, or they want to.
Mm, yeah.
Everyone who's famous and rich and wealthy, regardless of how they got it,
yeah.
is admired, and people bow to them and curtsy and all this stuff.
Mm.
We see this on much entertainment every day, you know, the stars.
Mm.
The people are showing you their gods.
Yeah, that's right.
They're showing you what they worship.
Mm. So, I mean, do you think it's a misinterpretation from in this instance, from our point of view, that we believe that we thought that the human race in that sense actually was something more? But if we actually were to look at it, maybe maybe that is what the human race is and was and so forth, but it's you know, we who are the, you know, the divergent factor in the the human experiment.
Yeah. And that's what I always say. I would not try to save this system.
Yeah.
Which is artificial beyond perversion.
Hmm.
It's corrupt from top to bottom.
Yeah.
In fact, we all have to be forced into it and be corrupt to survive. Because it's a scaled system of dog-eat-dog from the worst ones at the top down to the bottom. And we're all forced to participate because they've given us no other way out.
That's right.
Closed all the old loopholes. You can't go off into the country, put up an old shack somewhere and live your days out because a man with a tape measure from the government is going to measure it and demand taxes.
Yeah, that's right.
You must get money to pay him. If you get money, you've got to go out and work in the exploitation business or be exploited yourself. Or work for someone that's exploiting someone else by what you make.
Yeah.
Not at a vast profit, which is extortion. The whole system is based on a form of extortion.
That's right.
And
do you think
and
that...
And yet most people, as you know, would probably, as I say, if you could show them any other way, they would rather opt for that which they know.
Do you think that they have... because in a sense, I mean, if you were to look at nature, I don't see it. I don't see the nature as a brutal, you know, force. But the reality of it is that, you know, there's always a bigger fish. You know, the bigger fish eat the smaller ones and so forth. I mean, it's rampant in that sense in nature. It's about one species, you know, actually, you know, thriving on another. Do you think that that is what has been emulated within the artificial human system, that they've looked upon nature and said, okay, in order
they,
for this
in fact,
to...
All through their writings, the elite always talked about the laws of nature. Now they just use the word science, which for the same thing, that's the same thing for them. However, what they never talk about is the fact that being humans, we always have the temptation to do the wrong thing, but we have the choice to do the right thing. Animals and insects don't. So we're not animals, you see. We're not insects.
Yeah, that's right. I definitely.
We have choices.
I agree.
You know, you can't blame a bear for coming up and killing your cat outside your house. Because it will want to eat the cat, you see. And there's no point in persuading him either. But with humans, we have the choice of what we want to do.
Yeah.
And as I say, it's always easy to do the wrong thing than to do the right thing. It's an odd phenomena.
It is.
However, the old story is, there's that collection agency in a sense, the more wrongs you do, they'll catch up with you eventually. You can't get away with it. And the world really has got an accumulation of choosing the wrong things. But we're about due for a comeuppance.
Seems to be.
And yet we always do know what the right thing is. We do know. Now, the only person you could say is not human on the planet, again, is a psychopath. Because if you define human as someone, a fully human, who is, it's nothing to do with intellect.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with education or living standard. It's to do with empathy for other people. The psychopath does not have it at all. They're like a separate species. And because of that, they have no quibbles about doing what we would judge as being wrong.
Yeah.
They don't have guilt. They have no guilt whatsoever about anything that, which they do. So we have a different type amongst us, but too many today, I think. And we're allowing them to guide us. And what they're going to do is to stamp out our ability, our uniqueness. Above all the animals, insects, and everything else, they want to stamp out our ability to have consciousness, to make conscious decisions off right and wrong. You've decided they're going to do it all for us. And so there will be no individual path. There'll be no ability to even seek anything beyond yourself, for yourself.
And this is in a way the battle of our times. I mean, if again, if we look at history, there have been, you know, numerous amounts of you know, tyranny is roaming around, and in all ages it seems like there is a different battle to be fought, and in this one it is just as we have been talking about here today, and that seems to be the kind of our battle in that sense.
It's a battle.
Yeah.
See, you don't find this in what, and I always used to wonder why an elite in all sciences too are taught this, they teach the students of zoology and ethnology and so on, they teach them this, and they call them primitive peoples.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who is, and again they call it stagnant or arrested civilizations, people who are quite happy with the tools they have, the lifestyle that they have, they're not interested in going any further.
Yeah.
But we call them primitive or arrested civilizations.
Mm.
And the elite really hate them. They really hate them. Because those people are, it's almost like showing them an alternative system.
Yeah, exactly.
To their own.
A more natural one, you know.
And they have no problems with psychopaths because they don't have any armies, standing armies or military or police. If a deviant were to come along or pop up, they would dispose of that deviant. Because the psychopath, if he's allowed to carry on, will seek power. Every psychiatric book on the planet admits the psychopath does more damage to those around them than to themselves. Because they feel no guilt, sorrow, or pain or anything else. But they crave power and power over others. And our system, which is called money, reward, punishment, etc., and accumulation, is built from its inception in money and a commercial psychopathic system where the rich live, the poor die, the old story. That's not a humane system. It's actually a psychopathic system. The reason being that pathocracies always end up giving you a culture which is based on their belief system. We go along with it because all that we know, if you're born into it, but we wouldn't go as far, hopefully, is to kill the person next to you to get the promotion.
That might come about, though, a battle of the employment, you know.
Yeah, oh, my God. It's probably happened a lot more than we know.
Sheesh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's the system. That's the system. We are in the deviant system, run by the deviants.
And we have to, you know, we have to wake up from our, you know, naive attitude that they're, you know, because often it goes back to, I think, with the fact that people don't recognize that there actually is people out there who don't have their best of interest at heart, you know, that even the ruling forces, you know, might actually be out there to not help you, but to actually harm you. And then, and again, it's more about our naive attitude towards that, I think.
Yes, and if you go into the, again, the study of the psychopath, it's all self-explanatory. Because a psychopath who lacks the emotion is a born actor. He smells the wind immediately, doesn't think it through, he instinctively acts. And he will be a spokesman for you. And he'll say all the right things, he'll put on all of the drama you expect to see and hear. And they have led us down through the ages in this monetary system.
You know, Alan, I think that this is a great place to begin to round things up here. I very much enjoyed this conversation. So again, thank you so much, you know, for coming on and sharing with us, you know, your insights and theories and opinions about this. And I think that, you know, as I say, I think that this is a battle that is going on in that sense, and we are in it, as it were, right now. And you are doing the work you do over at cuttingthroughthematrix.com, of course. But again, I want to give you the opportunity to, in case we have some new listeners in this segment or whatever with us, to mention your websites and what do you have up there for us.
Yeah, they can check into cuttingthroughthematrix.com and alanwattsentientsentinel.eu and take as many free downloads as they want of my talks and try and support me by buying some of my books if possible. And we'll keep going as long as we can, or as long as it's possible.
As long as it's possible, exactly. Thank you so much, Alan, again, for coming on. Looking forward to next month talking with you again. Until then, of course, take good care, and we'll talk more then.
Okey-doke.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Bye.
I was thinking last week about what I wanted to play, knowing that today was Easter Sunday, and Christmas was a special, you could call it, Alan's holiday that he always wanted to give a gift and remember Christmas. And these last 3 years, I think Easter has taken on a significance for me, and I wanted to try to find something that got into the esoteric of ideas such as dying and rising, dying, being born again, even baptism. But these ideas were floating around in my head, and I hadn't actually sat down to look through old talks and come up with something. But I called Prince, a longtime listener to Alan, because I wanted to do a real history with him. And I got him on the phone, and before I even told him why I was calling, he started telling me immediately about a talk that he thought that Alan's listeners should hear. He said, "This is such a profound talk. They should hear it at least once, maybe multiple times, because Alan explains so much in here, and I think it's going to answer a lot of questions for people." And that was this talk, June 24, 2007, Hour 2. And as Prince and I were talking, he said, "Oh, the levels of control, everything, but everything is controlled. Everything that's out there is controlled. It's just layer within layer within layer of control." And I agreed with him, and then we chatted some more, and he said that yes, he would do a real history with me, which is upcoming this Thursday, the 4th of April. I then listened to this talk, and I agreed with Prince that it was excellent. And not only was it excellent, but it was the perfect talk to put up for Easter. Alan didn't really talk about some of the things that were on my mind, where he has explicitly talked about the sun in the winter at the winter solstice, how it descends and then 3 days later it rises again, how these astrological concepts have been used in pre-Christian religions and in Christianity itself. So I didn't get that in this talk, but it was so rich with other concepts that to me tied in with what Easter means to me that I was just thrilled that Prince had mentioned this to me. Levels of control. That's what we talked about, Prince and I. Levels of control. Everything is controlled. And Alan gave a good visualization, a good illustration of what it's like to start to come into consciousness of reality, how we've been all been lied to. And longtime listeners are going to know this. I'm going to elaborate on the illustration just a little bit. So the Walking Dead, the zombies, those people who are asleep in the land of Nod, television land, however you want to describe them, the normies, they're over in the woods. We'll call it the woods of zombies. It's a big forest with nothing but lies and deception and people walking around like zombies. And then there's a big clearing. I always think of it, when I visualize this, like two strips, almost like a battleground, if you will, the way they used to fight the battles, and both sides would just line up and you'd have a war of attrition that way. It was kind of silly. But so in the open clearing, this big field, it's just an expanse of nothing but a field. It's empty, seemingly empty. And then on the other side of the field is another forest, dense forest. And Alan would always describe that as like safety or reality, you know. So that other forest is almost like the forest of consciousness or reality. That's your forest. I like to think of it as my own consciousness. So here I am in the forest of the zombies, and I've got to get across this field into the forest of my consciousness. Now, at a glance, that seems easy. I'm just going to walk across the field or run across the field. But the way Alan describes this is that field is full of landmines. Almost everywhere you step, there's a landmine. It's going to destroy you. You're not going to make it to the safety of the forest of your own consciousness. That's not going to happen. You're going to get blown up along the way because of the landmines. And obviously, a lot of what Alan was doing was pointing out the landmines. And, most importantly, showing us how we could spot those ourselves. So when Prince and I are talking with each other about levels of control and that everything, but everything, is put out there to control you, that visualization of Alan's came into my mind. So Prince agreed to do the real history with me, and I hung up and went about my business, listened to this talk. And for some reason, well, I kind of know the reason why. I know exactly the reason why my yoga class in LA popped into my head. So I'm going to tell you the story of yoga in Los Angeles, California. I lived there for a lot of years, and I did yoga off and on. When I first got there, you know, everybody was doing it, so I did too. I went to a few classes, and then I thought to myself, young, you know, fresh off the boat, this is a little bit like a religion, and I'm not comfortable with it. So I didn't go. Then I'm there for a year or two, and by that time, you know, the corruption of your environment creeps in. So I started going to yoga on a kind of a regular basis. I always looked at it as just physical exercise, stretching, and being limber. I met some interesting characters along the way. One class that I did for a while was with a woman who claimed, and it's probably true, but she claimed to have been friends with Timothy Leary and Baba Ram Das, and, you know, so blah, blah, blah. You definitely got some Hinduism, some New Age ideas tucked into the yoga class with her. Then, you know, I went on about my business, and that class faded away, and I was on to, you know, maybe spending more time working, etc. So sometime in 2006, I'm thinking that it was probably pretty late in the year, a neighbor of mine invited me to go to a new yoga class that she had just discovered. She said, oh, it's amazing. It is the yoga class to go to. Now, it wasn't that far from my house, so it was easy to do, and I went with her. And right away, I thought, well, I'll just describe it. It was the biggest yoga center, yoga hall that I'd ever been in. It was all serene and, you know, kind of this vibe. You walked in, and everybody was wearing white. Now, all the teachers were wearing white. And they were also wearing turbans, white turbans on their head. And I was a little put off by it, but I'm like, oh, yeah, well, I'm just here to do the yoga. And I don't remember what I was wearing. Let's just say black sweatpants and a gray t-shirt, okay? Let's just pretend that's what I was wearing. Well, everybody was wearing white. Now, if they had said at the door, you can't come in unless you're wearing white, I probably would have turned around and never gone back to the class. But, you know, I went the next time, maybe to a second class. And I eventually, maybe by the third class, I thought, well, I've got white sweatpants and a white t-shirt. You see, I didn't want to stand out. It was as simple as that. I didn't want to stick out. I think it was about my third class. I'm listening to the teacher talk. Now, I got to back up a minute here. We do this heavy, heavy breathing thing that almost made you feel like you were going to pass out. And then there was a gong. So you do the yoga really hard for about 45 minutes, and then the teacher would beat this gong, and you'd gong, and you'd go into a kind of a meditative state. Well, he always kind of talked and joked. He was a real personality as he did the class. And by the third class, I was a little annoyed with his patter. And I decided to email him about it. He had advertised his email address, so I wrote him an email. This is 2006, and George W. Bush is president of the United States. I'm not political. I didn't vote. I didn't really care about politics, but this yoga teacher's patter put me off. So I wrote him a letter, an email, short and sweet, and I said, "Why are you always bashing Republicans? Can't you tell that there's no difference between the Democrats and the Republicans? It's the same thing. Blah, blah, blah." Well, I got an email back from him. And this is what he sent me in the email. He sent me a link to Wikipedia on Hegel and Hegel's dialectic, the dialectic. Well, I'd never heard of this. I read about it, and I'm like, oh, that's really fascinating. You've got a thesis, an antithesis, and a synthesis. Huh. About the next day, I didn't even write back and say thank you, whatever, but the next day I got another email from the yoga teacher. And in this, he said, "Here's some things that you might enjoy listening to." He sent me a link to InfoWars, Alex Jones. He sent me a link to David Icke. And he sent me a link to Red Ice Radio. Well, I never thought of myself as having a particularly methodical approach to anything, but I started off with Alex Jones, top of the list. Didn't get to the other two because immediately, as soon as I'm listening to Alex Jones, I run around for about 2 weeks telling anybody who would listen that 9/11 was an inside job. I mean, I went in like, whew, there I go. Yeah, did you know? And just repeating verbatim everything. I mean, I must have been seeking something at this point in my life. I mean, obviously I was, because that just grabbed my attention. So that was it. 2 weeks of 9/11 as an inside job. Then I got to David Icke. I guess, I don't know what it was about Alex, the bullhorn, it was the yelling. I don't really like yelling. I don't know. It just, after a little bit of it, it was enough. So on to David Icke. Now, I'm confessing my weaknesses here on Easter, but I did, the power viewing of Icke for several days. Just boom, 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 one thing after another, after another. And yes, it's true, I admit. I then spent about a week telling anybody who wanted to listen that the controllers were shape-shifting reptilians. And I convinced myself that this was plausible. I looked at the videos. I'm like, it could be. And a couple of my friends mocked me pretty seriously hard. But it was okay because by that time I had moved on to Red Ice Radio. And Red Ice Radio interviewed a lot of people and had all kinds of guests. And I listened to 2 days. At this point, I was self-employed. I worked from a home office and, I had things to do, but I could certainly listen or watch videos, listen to things in the background, or if something grabbed my attention, like a shape-shifting reptilian, I could just, devote my whole attention to it. So I get to Red Ice. I've got several of the interviews lined up to play. I listened to one after another. I can't remember any of them at all. But maybe say interview 4 or 5. They were talking to a soft-spoken Scotsman named Alan Watt. And this would have been one of the very early ones, maybe the first or the second, you know, back in October, or maybe possibly November of 2006. And I don't even know how to describe it other than to say my head exploded. Everything, but everything, seemed to be upside down in my thinking. Like I couldn't trust anything. You know, I had already started to laugh at myself for thinking that we were run by shape-shifting reptilians. But I was blown away, and I went to Alan's website, and I just started listening to talk after talk after talk after talk. And that really changed everything for me. I didn't even know that I was necessarily looking for everything to change. You know, I think always with me throughout my life was this idea that there was something beyond this world, that I wanted to be a good person, that I wanted to live have a spiritual pursuit, you know, like a hobby or something, like, you know, to be more spiritual, you know, just these kind of nebulous ideas. But it wasn't really the driving force of my life. And when I started to listen to Alan's talks, as they say, the scales started coming off of my eyes. I started to see for the first time and hear for the first time. It was amazing. Amazing. And I started communicating with Alan, and eventually I started doing the transcription of the Waiting for the Miracle book, and then I talked to him, long conversations, and eventually I went up and visited him, and then the rest is history. But before I left LA, during that period of time that I was listening to Alex Jones and David Icke and Red Eyes Radio and so forth, I then just kind of took a little trip in my head back to that yoga class, and I was thinking to myself, what were you even doing going to that yoga class? You should have known the minute that you walked in the door it was some kind of cult. I mean, what's this with the hyperventilating breathing and the gong, and everybody's love bombing you, and they want you to go and see the summer solstice and go camping in New Mexico and love, 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 be part, and oh, teacher training, you know, even the students should do teacher training, you know, it's a cult. And I never went back. I got the email from the teacher that learned about the dialectic, found Alan Watt, never went back to yoga class. In fact, never went to any other yoga class. So when I was first getting to know Alan and I told him about that experience, I said, why do you think that teacher? I said, he was always promoting like lefty ideas, and why would he tell me about Alex Jones and David Icke? Why would he tell me particularly about Alex Jones, who was kind of identified with, well, not the left, you know, patriot, alternative, whatever, but definitely more in line with what you think of as conservative or right-wing or Republican. And Alan said, well, what your yoga teacher was doing is what a lot of people in a lot of cities, particularly LA, New York, but you know, cities everywhere in the world, you've got layer upon layer of control. The individual who can think for themselves, who can start to put together the con, who can start to understand what's going on and might be able to explain what's happening to somebody else, that's the one that the controllers are always looking for. And so what your yoga teacher was doing was he spotted you as a potential thinker, a potential individual, a potential problem. He then supplied you with something else to get lost in. He said, it doesn't really matter, you know, like that yoga teacher maybe likes it if you stay in his club and pay more and more money and go on this retreat and that retreat and you know, you become a mouthpiece for yoga. But it doesn't really matter if you don't go that direction, as long as they're able to spot you and send you off the next rabbit hole. So what I'm describing here, I just said rabbit hole, but what I'm describing is the landmine. So somehow, at that point in my life, I have begun to become ready to leave the forest of the zombies. And the very first landmine that I come to in the clearing is a yoga class. And that yoga teacher hands me my next landmine, which is a series of alternate voices to get lost in. Because I could have spent the rest of my life with some palette of colors coming from 9/11 is an inside job or shape-shifting reptilians run the whole show. Doesn't really matter, because whatever colors on that palette I choose, I'm neutralized. And that's that. So Alan explained this to me, and I thought that was very interesting. There is something else that I'm going to say about Alan and Red Ice Radio, and I'm not going to get too deep into the details of it when that'll be apparent why. But at a certain point in late 2007, Alan was scheduled to have another talk with Henrique, and Henrique called about 15 minutes late to the interview. And rather sheepishly, embarrassedly, explained to Alan that he wasn't going to be having him back on the show. And all I'm going to share with you is that Red Ice Radio had an opportunity to expand their reach, and that opportunity came with the caveat, no more Alan Watt. And I think it's safer for me if I leave it at that, but that was the reason why Alan did not appear on Red Ice Radio again. It was a choice that he did not make, and it's interesting. So I took a peek because I haven't followed them, no idea what they're up to, kind of vaguely remembered a couple of years ago that I heard that they were, you know, kind of into the white nationalist thing, and sure enough, when I look them up, what they're talking about is, well, they're described naturally as being white supremacist, but you know, that is the direction that they seem to have moved in more than a decade ago. The only other thing that I'm going to say about that is that it's easy to see why even sincere people, and I'm not saying that Henrique was sincere or not. I'm just saying that it's easy to see why people latch on to one thing or another, like nationalism, and then you add in white nationalism. It's easy to see, again, in the dialectical process, why someone says, this is the problem, and this is the entire problem, and if we just solve this problem, then everything will be okay, right? So that's Red Eyes. But because I had been introduced to Red Ice and subsequently to Alan Watt by my yoga teacher, I thought, let's just take a look at that yoga teacher. And I couldn't remember his name. It really took me a lot of digging to, you know, I mean, I knew the location. I didn't even remember at the time that it was Kundalini yoga. I don't even know that I was that conscious of it then. It was just another yoga class. But eventually, I found the name of the yoga teacher. And he's still on the go in L.A. And his name is Harijuan. And I remember I said that everybody was wearing white. Well, he described himself as a white Sikh, or an American Sikh. And I don't know, I mean, it seems to be a thing. But the other thing that I didn't know when I went to the class in L.A. that I learned in researching this was that Harijuan was a top student of somebody named Yogi Bhajan. And Yogi Bhajan lived from 1929 to 2004. He is described as an Indian-born American entrepreneur, yoga guru, spiritual teacher, introduced his version of Kundalini yoga to the United States. He was the spiritual director of the 3HO, Healthy, Happy, Holy organization, the 3HO Foundation and Business Ventures, with over 300 centers in 35 countries. Now, I'm going to get back to him in just a minute, but this is Yogi Bhajan. Then back to my teacher is Harijuan, and in researching what he was up to, I stumbled upon an interesting little thing about him. First of all, he's a Grammy award-winning musician with his, I guess, his gong music. I don't know. But yeah, there were some famous people in the class, but, you know, that was L.A., and again, not something that I really paid that much attention to. But in reading about it, I learned that it's kind of like the yoga class, and lots of famous people were latched on to this Harijuan, and then later another teacher, a young woman who passed away a couple of years ago by the name, she called herself Guru Jagat, I think that's how you say it, Jagat, Katie Griggs. And here is a little thing from 2021. On August the 1st, Guru Jagat, the charismatic leader of the Rama Yoga Institute in Venice, Los Angeles, different location than I went to, but there she is, whose following included celebrities like Alicia Keys and Russell Brand, was reported dead at the age of 41. I'm going to read a little bit more about this woman I never met, but it's kind of interesting. The news came at a tumultuous moment. Former devotees of Jagat's teaching were accusing her and her mentor would have been Harijuan, of abusive and manipulative practices and of running a cult. She had also been accused of platforming a Holocaust denier and spreading COVID-19 conspiracy theories. The other little thing that I discovered was that Harijuan, his name was Steve, had actually spent time in prison for some scam that he ran years ago, years before I went to his yoga class. And he was known as Toner Steve because he was bilking companies, small companies, out of lots of money by promising to deliver to them toner for their printers, but taking the money and not delivering. So Toner Steve went to prison, came out, now he's Harijuan, and he's got these ties to the Yogi Bhajan, and famous people are following his classes, including Russell Brand. Now, Yogi Bhajan was accused posthumously of sexual abuse by several dozen of his female followers. And they go on to describe that. And of course, this has been vehemently denied by Harijuan, and many, many other people have said, no, that's not what happened. But like I said, I went to a few classes. I did not know anything about this, and it was fascinating to me to see that the yogi Bhajan had met John Paul II at the Vatican in 1984. There's pictures of him shaking hands with George W. Bush. He ended up settling in New Mexico and bringing in a lot of money into the state of New Mexico. They honored him by flying flags at half-mast for 2 days after he died, and they renamed Highway State Highway 106 as the Yogi Bhajan Memorial Highway. Okay? Now, I remember one time meeting somebody else in L.A., completely different thing, but he was telling me about some new agey thing that was really cool that was going on in New Mexico, and that they were all good friends with the governor of New Mexico, who's now deceased, but his name was Bill Richardson. So here I'm looking up, just hold that in your little hat for a minute, in your turban, if you will. And I see that a congressman, Tom Udall, he was an American diplomat, lawyer, politician, served as United States ambassador to New Zealand and Samoa since 2021. He's a member of the Democratic Party. He was a senator for New Mexico from 2009 to 2020-21. And there's a picture of him with the widow of Hari Bhajan and some kind of award and presentation there. So there's a lot of political clout that these people have, particularly in New Mexico, but I did see him there with George W. Bush. So here's something that came out about him after these allegations of sexual misconduct and rape were made on him. This is just part of an article. I'll post the whole thing. The accounts from former followers of Yogi Bhajan depict a grim portrait of a man who used anything and everything he could to exploit, abuse, control, and dominate the very people who devoted their lives to him. Like so many other disgraced gurus, his goal was money, sex, and power. And the hypocrisy was apparent. Bhajan was married with kids and claimed to be celibate, but was sexually abusing his followers. He made his followers become vegetarians, but he hoarded an extensive collection of ivory and exotic animal furs. He organized drug-free America campaigns while he and his right-hand men imported 20 tons of marijuana. He preached a spiritual life, yet hoarded millions in jewels and luxury cars. Bhajan lied and deceived his students from the very beginning. The ruse began with his fabricated backstory as a well-known holy man in India. Blah, 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 blah. Well, if you go to his student, Hari Jawan, a.k.a. Toner Steve, you find Hari Jawan saying publicly that he was very interested in techniques of mind control. And Russell Brand is a star student of Hari Jawan's, and Hari Jawan's now ex-wife. He's got a younger woman and wearing all white with a white turban, naturally. And what I found easily, with no trouble at all, is lots of Russell Brand promoting this yoga, lots of videos that he did with Hari Jawan and talking about Kundalini yoga in its various forms. Now, I've never really thought much about Russell Brand because it's just that he's the kind of person that it's like, ugh. You know, he's just an actor and a sometime mouthpiece for sometime alternative radio sources. You see him on a show or whatever. An actor, I always think if you're going to be an actor, right? Don't you like the flexibility of the roles? So here's Toner Steve, and he's just always going to be a holy man, you know? He's always got to wear white and a white turban and be a holy man. And here's Russell Brand, and I think his costume is, he's always going to look like Charlie Manson. You know, you can put this shirt on him. He can wear white with a peace sign and some beads, or he can wear white and a crucifix, or what, you know, or he can wear some black thing. But he's, you know, the role he's playing is Charlie Manson. I don't know. It's a weird world, and it gets a little bit weirder because Russell Brand is a mouthpiece for all things left. And George Monbiot in England was not too many years ago saying how wonderful Russell Brand was for saying all the right things. George Monbiot is one who wants rewilding in England. You know, get rid of the people, bring the animals in. And then when all of a sudden it appears that Russell Brand is denying the COVID narrative and putting out anti-vax things, and George Monbiot is like, what? What happened? You know, he's gone all right-wing. We can't figure it out. When Brand is accused of rape, I guess, I don't know. You know, it's interesting, the people who leapt to his defense. Alex Jones said, and here it is from The Independent in the UK, conspiracy theorist Alex Jones says Russell Brand is being accused of rape because he's fighting globalists. Jones goes on to say that he is a friend of Russell Brand and he spent a lot of time hanging out with him, and women just threw themselves at him. That they're, in other words, why would he need to sexually abuse a woman or rape a woman when women just threw themselves at him, right? So Alex Jones defended Russell Brand from rape and sexual assault allegations by saying the comedian is being targeted because he's come out against globalists. Jones said he's been friends with Brand for 6 years in a video recorded at an airport and circulated on social media on Sunday, a day after these stunning allegations emerged against Brand. I've never seen women throw themselves at anyone like with him, Jones said, comparing women throwing their panties at Elvis. It's like that, he said, adding it was literally women jumping at us. No one ever accused him for the last 15 years of assault because they say he's such a big sweetheart. Okay, so that's Jones coming to his defense. Jones claimed, according to the article, without any evidence, that suddenly allegations are happening to Brand because he has come out against Big Pharma and the globalists. A lot of people have lined up with Brand. Brand has done an interview with Tucker Carlson. What I'm saying is it appears to me that he's in a club. And it also appears to me that because he is a paid actor and television presenter, that whichever way the wind is blowing, whichever way the wind needs to blow, is the direction that Brand is going to be pushed because he's promoting something. Now, I do not know if the now deceased governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson, if the Lolita Express accusations came out while he was alive or after he died, but Governor Bill Richardson was connected to Jeffrey Epstein, according to Virginia, I think it's Jeffrey, I can't remember her last name, but the biggest whistleblower, if you will, pointed out Bill Richardson as an abuser. The world of so-called truth and the so-called alternate is really just an extension of the regular world, if you will. And I am saying that the voices that purport to speak for you, the people who say they are championing the cause for freedom, they are taking a stand against the globalists or against Big Pharma, or they're speaking out against such and such. This is the dialectic at work. And as Prince and I were discussing the layers of control are so deep. And don't for a moment think that little old you doesn't matter. Or even that I'm just, you know, oh, I'm creating some idea that my yoga teacher was looking out for a thinker. Ooh, you know, spotted one and sent me this. This really is how the world works. Because as Alan just got finished saying in this talk that you listened to, the element that cannot be controlled so far is the element of the true individual. The true individual who can think and see things, who has not stepped on one of the many, many, many landmines that are out there for you to blow yourself up on. That is really how the world works. And for me, Easter, the esoteric symbolism of Easter, the dying and rising from the dead. To me, that is a story of the individual who dies to this world and to everything in it and everyone in it and every trap and every landmine. You are born again. You receive your new baptism into the spirit, the dove that lands on your head, your second baptism. You rise again into the completed you, if that's the journey that you've chosen to take. It has been said by a person who let me know that they thought that I was trying to make a religion of Alan. And I'm not. He didn't want that. I don't want that. I talk about him all the time and think about his message that he gave us all the time, because it was freedom. It was liberation. It was the tools to be able to think for yourself and see what you're seeing, instead of being told how to see what you're seeing. It's an amazing thing to be able to cross that field, get past all of those landmines, and come into your own consciousness of reality. It takes a lot of effort, because the field full of landmines is deliberately made attractive. The person who's standing right next to the first explosive device is just beautiful. They radiate holiness and peace in their white with their turban. And the world is at peace if you go that way. If you don't, there might be somebody yelling at you about the globalist New World Order and, you know, shaking a fist. But if you pass that person by, there might be somebody else who is a bit of a chameleon, and it's just whatever. Because the latest thing that Russell Brand is saying is that he's thinking about getting baptized, and he's thinking about becoming a Christian. And he's got many, many, many thousands of followers who are just think this is wonderful. This is from Friday, March 22. Actor Russell Brand shared in a recent Instagram post that he's been going to different churches and is interested in being baptized as he continues to face allegations of sexual misconduct and a lawsuit. On Instagram Wednesday, the 48-year-old actor questioned his followers about the church and asked different questions surrounding the act of baptism. I've been going to church, a church where they do alpha courses. I guess that's sort of a Church of England. I've been to a Catholic church, and I'm considering going to an Eastern Orthodox church. Brand, who has starred in several movies throughout his career, said in an Instagram video. blah, 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 blah. This is what you get in the field full of landmines. And Alan only wanted to share his knowledge and the benefit of his wisdom so that you wouldn't be stepping on those landmines. He knew, sadly, how few of us are willing to really die to this system and everything in it and every lie we've ever been told, who will just fly past all of it and keep going on that own individual journey to, one way that he put it in this talk, completion, completion. So I wish you a happy Easter from the Matrix to the true Trinity.